I open up the doors to the garage with some doors and strange days. Hi, I'm Jim O'Brien. Thanks for joining us. You can always subscribe on iTunes or go to WCSX.com and check out the garage page. Wanted to play the song. Our guest this morning, Greg Gardner from the Detroit Free Press. Great follow on Twitter, and also check them out at freep.com. So much discussion here in the Motor City and worldwide about self-driving cars, autonomous vehicles. Greg, one of the smartest guys I know when it comes to this, and we're going to dive into it a little deep this morning, but I think everybody's thinking about, where are we going with this, when are we going to get there, and what will it be like with self-driving cars? I sound like the old IBM commercial. Where are the flying cars? They're supposed to be flying cars. You know, a lot of stuff here in the Motor City going on, obviously, with autonomous driving, what we see in Ann Arbor, Greg, but when they had the telematics update conference in Novi, I don't think people understood locally or on a national scale.
Yeah.
It was a pretty big meeting, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of a must attend for anyone in the automotive electronics field. And it's grown from, you know, several years ago. It was basically for people that were designing the infotainment, you know, systems in your vehicle. And now it's grown to include, you know, the latest development in autonomous technology. And, yeah, it's really a major event.
I saw him with Mark Rosekind was there. He's the head of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Easy for me not to say. But something that jumped out, maybe I just hadn't read it before, levels of self-driving cars.
Yes.
That was new to me.
Okay. Well, yeah, we're currently in level one, which includes everything from adaptive cruise control to a lane departure alert to even the early versions of automatic emergency braking.
Right.
Now, Tesla has a system called Autopilot, and sometime in the next 6 months, General Motors will introduce a similar system called Super Cruise on the, I believe, the Cadillac CT6,
right,
which will take you into level two, where you can briefly take your hands off the wheel, but you can't disengage. Now, as we go further and further into level two and then eventually enter level three, level three means the driver can't disengage completely, but the reality is we tend to overtrust the system. And people start pulling out their laptop or, you know, getting on their phone, and, you know, maybe that would be okay for a short trip. But then all of a sudden there might be an unforeseen circumstances that the sensors and the algorithms can't process.
And then you've got to take the wheel. So if you're too engaged, if you're too distracted, mm-hmm, you're so out of the moment, you're basically screwed.
Right.
Okay.
Now, to kind of try to simplify this, Google is dead set on getting to level four, which means you can disengage. Google envisions stripping the vehicle of the steering wheel and the pedals, okay? We're not there yet, but I'm not going to say we can't get there. But the traditional industry is making incredibly positive strides through all this stuff that many of us are already experiencing, like, you know, adaptive cruise control and lane departure alert, blind spot alert. All these things are making us safer, but they're not taking us out of the loop. So the tension comes when we get between level three and level four, because as erratic as human drivers are, the mathematic reality is there's one fatality for every 100 million miles driven in this country. In relative terms, the technology can't get us anywhere close to that now. But it's doable as we learn more about how the sensors and this LIDAR technology, which are the little rotating things on top of the vehicle that detect the vehicle's location with the help of three-dimensional maps and can guide it even through a changing environment where there's road construction.
That's something we've talked about a lot, Greg.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're looking at existing lane departure technology, it's based upon seeing the the lines on the freeway or the road that you're on. And in Michigan, I mean, good luck. As a matter of fact, I was test driving the new Lincoln MKX. I had it. And it has the not just parallel parking, but perpendicular parking. Now, right. It's still semi-autonomous where you've got to hit the brake when you pull in. However, even in our parking lot, which has maybe an 8-year-old paint job, it had trouble picking up certain spots. It drove by spots that were closer because it couldn't see the paint. So that's to your point. I mean, we assume that, but with existing technology and vehicles, if you hit Super Cruise in a Cadillac CT6, you're going to go maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes, and the car's going to bark at you to do something because look at the road sign. The paint on the road's just not there.
Yes, right. Weather is still a major challenge. And eventually, there's a combination of you know, three-dimensional mapping and what's called, essentially artificial intelligence. It's also called deep learning, where the sensors begin to figure things out or figure out changes in the vehicle's environment. There are also major infrastructure challenges. Eventually, the only way to solve the weather problem could be you have to embed sensors in the road itself, that even with snow could be detected.
Can you imagine that, Greg? How are you going to do that? Oh, I mean, how are you going to do that in a country the size of the U.S.?
Which is having a hard time filling potholes.
Right. Yeah. Now, the other thing, and we're talking with Greg Gardner from the Detroit Free Press, and something I was telling you off air before we started the podcast, was at that ITS World Congress, and one of the more interesting debates to me then, and it still exists now, V2V and V2X, when people talk about that. So folks listening to this podcast right now, V2V is vehicle-to-vehicle conversation. Like, for example, like you've seen it with platooning, the idea is that my car sees a pothole. It tells everybody behind it, hey, get out of this lane. There's a big pothole here. And it kind of helps you navigate around it. V2X is using the infrastructure of cities for streetlights and things to talk to the cars.
Right.
I don't trust the city of Detroit handling water bills. I really don't want them controlling my car.
Oh, I completely understand. But the reality is we already are kind of the guinea pig here in southeastern Michigan for a project that has already embedded transponders along 696, 94, essentially from Detroit to Ann Arbor, and I believe parts of 275. And these would ideally, as more vehicles become equipped with the capability to communicate with essentially, they're embedded on the, the light post.
Okay.
But there will come a time when that system will be able to alert you to where the backups are. So, if you're on 696 and you're trying to get to Southfield and it's backed up at 75, it could direct you for a brief detour that will maybe shorten your commute. So that's the potential benefit of that. Vehicle to vehicle. The problem is it's going to take time to get enough vehicles with this equipment on the road so that they can communicate with each other.
So, like when you see Chevrolet and a lot of the OEMs, when they're saying they're out there telling everybody we got 4G LTE in your car, everyone's like, oh, that's great for me. I'm like, yeah, but it's great for you.
Right.
But they're approaching on two levels. One, obviously, they want you to buy the data and be able to stream it into your car. But on the second level, they want your car to be equipped with that tech. So if this is the direction we're going to go with self-driving cars, if it's V2V, it's there, right?
Yeah. Well, and it also will enable the Ubers and the Lyfts to detect the most frequently traveled routes by their vehicles. Okay, so they'll know where to develop the three-dimensional maps for eventually the level four autonomous self-driving, vehicles. I mean, the most likely application will be in these ride-sharing networks.
Right.
Think of them as robo-taxis. But they'll only be limited to a few number of routes and, don't expect to just randomly go from point A to point Z. That's not a frequently traveled route, by a robo-taxi. That won't be happening.
Well, and the other part with technology, and I think I think that he actually, Mark Roskind actually acknowledged that in Novi, that, mm-hmm. you know, the technology is going to be going faster than you can regulate it. But it's the auto industry. It's one of the most powerful technological industries in the world. If they get their head around something and want to move forward, they're moving forward.
Right, exactly. And it's similar to the unresolved questions around cybersecurity. I mean, with all due respect to NHTSA, you know, here's an agency that hasn't figured out how to handle, you know, what, 60 million recalled airbags that are, in many cases, 10 to 15 years old. And now all of this technology is coming at it, you know, that's going to change, like, faster than you or I can process.
Right. Mm-hmm. That is, I mean, to me, that's the key. It's I've always told people, Greg, when we talk about it, and they're like, you know, this whole self-driving mm-hmm. car thing. I'm like, it's coming. It's just a question of how soon the train's going to get here.
Right.
I do love, what was it, a couple of years ago, Jeremy Clarkson had mm-hmm. had this hypothetical. You're talking about deep thinking computers, you know, like what was the, I remember really the first time we were exposed to one was on that IBM computer on Jeopardy that could react to things.
Exactly.
And now it's doing medical records. But he asked the question, the self-driving cars, you're an autonomous car. It's driving down the road. There's two lanes. The one lane is blocked. So if you keep going forward, you're going to die. You're going to hit this at a high rate of speed. In the other lane are two people walking, pedestrians. Where does the car go? You know, and who teaches a computer to make that decision?
Well, I mean, that's the Hobbesian choice that, you know, has to be made at some point. The other thing that I think people should be aware of that, you know, most of these vehicles are being tested in controlled environments. The exception is Google has had, you know, probably hundreds of vehicles in the Bay Area on public roads, but they're primarily not the main thoroughfares or expressways. They're on.
Well, Greg, then Google cars, what, under 25? 25 and under, right?
I mean, correct.
It's, yeah, so that's
correct.
That's right,
so,
there, yeah.
And these robo-taxis I mentioned are going to be deployed at very low speeds initially. So then you have the question of compatibility. I'm getting, maybe that's enough in, in the middle of Manhattan, but, you know, in other settings, you know, how is the remainder of the traffic flow going to react? And, you know, is there going to be open conflict between human drivers and robo-taxis?
So, wow. Yeah, and it's I'm amazed by all this stuff. And it really, is the evolution of, in some ways, I think, Greg, this is how people must have felt. When they saw cars 100 years ago and went, what the hell?
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
We're all going to get killed by them.
Yeah, I mean, we know in an abstract sense that it's coming, but we don't know the specifics. But when people ask me, well, is it real or is it not real? I mean, it is real. And generally, I mean, I just talked to two robotics experts at the University of Michigan, and I came away reassured that they know what they don't know. And I think that's true throughout most of the technology world. And while NHTSA and other regulators will be overwhelmed, they will be the voice that speaks up for safety first.
Which is what you want to hear. Yeah. I mean, that's really the one thing you want to hear. And then, but you wonder, though, you're still talking about private business. You're talking about companies that make money for a living.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's the rub, isn't it? I mean, they're gonna try to push as fast as they can to get this to market when the market says we want this. And there's still kind of that trepidation from people and whether or not they want an autonomous car. Yeah. I do, but I go to work at 4 o'clock in the morning. I would love to be able to get up, get in the car, have a cup of coffee, and catch up on the news without having to drive.
But, you know, then again, you have, you know, Google's promoting their concept on the basis of how it could free handicapped people, blind people who otherwise, you know, wouldn't be able to independently get around, you know, to the same degree. Yeah, that's a wonderful door that could be opened. But then that leads to, well, what criteria we use in issuing driver's licenses.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about what is age for a self-driving car? How old do you have to be to sit in a self-driving car? Can I have it take my kid to soccer practice for me?
Right.
You know, that. It is going to be some of the more interesting discussions. And unless, Greg, was it a cup? I'm trying to remember. I thought the Geneva Convention, though, as far as roads and stuff goes, one of the conventions they had said that there's still by law has to be someone behind the wheel at all times,
right? Yeah.
Okay.
That's still true, even in California. The question becomes, there are many, many questions, but as we get closer to level four, how, you know, that conceivably works for ride sharing because you eliminate the cost of drivers. But how does it work for the auto industry? Because basically, smaller vehicles are harder to make profitably. Unless you're going to make more of them and deploy them, you know, in ways that go beyond our traditional traffic system.
Even the design of a car, Greg. I mean, if you think about, we are oriented forward. The front and the back seat, we're all looking forward. If I'm in a true autonomous car where I don't have to look forward, then with the exception of the driver's seat, which is swivel, all the other seats can do whatever they want. I mean, they could face each other. I can change the front window into a monitor. I mean, there's. I'd imagine if you're a designer, if you're Ralph Gill out in Auburn Hills right now at FCA, it's a blank slate. It's all these things you never thought you could do with a vehicle you can do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, again, it goes back to the conflict between the traditional industry and the Google, Apple view of the world. At some point, you know, you got to decide how far you're going to go down the road of freeing people from the responsibility of safely guiding the vehicle.
Right. Which is an ethics question as much as a technical question.
Exactly.
And you know, one thing for the automakers, if you really didn't want Google and Apple in your stuff, you shouldn't invite them on the dashboard. The second you allowed the environment to their environment to come into your cars, where did you think this was going to go?
Well, exactly. But on the other hand, we are the people that are demanding all this connectivity, and the sad truth was people are more comfortable with replicating the icons from their phone onto that screen on the instrument panel than they are with all of these automaker derived systems, whether it's MyFord Touch or, you know, Chevy Link or
MyLink,
you know,
and all those the Cadillac Q systems and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it just made so much sense to turn that over to Apple and Google. But as you pointed out, once you let them into the vehicle, then whose vehicle is it?
You know, for folks who have Google this term, Google this term, a sticky environment. One of the things that the automakers, not the automakers, Apple and Google and anyone who's a developer, I want my device to go with you everywhere you go. And if I can have it in your car, even if it's not my brand of car, I win, because then I can sell you stuff. And that's the thing that they don't – I remember at the ITS World Conference, somebody brought out a number. Self-driving cars, as far as e-commerce, are in I think it was $3.2 trillion of untapped potential.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's mind-boggling how much – if you're a manufacturer of cars, you're like, hell yeah, I want to get to this level four as quick as I can so I can start making some money.
Right. But again, the safety is – the one argument that will prevail, and the potential to save 32,000 lives a year in this country alone is a great motivator, but we're not there yet.
No. I drove I had the Nissan Murano. I did a review of it, and I drove it from here to Mackinac, then over to Houghton. Yeah. Now, when I got on the freeway just to try this, I grabbed a bottle of water and two Clif Bars, and I never – once I got it up to like 70-something on 75, I never touched the brakes or the accelerator again for four hours.
Yeah.
And it worked. The adaptive cruise control, the braking, everything on it. It was smooth as can be. It wasn't, and I'm thinking to myself, to your point, we're closer than we've ever been, but there's some huge hurdles that are in the way.
Right. And, but you were on that trip prepared to take the wheel if you needed to.
Exactly. And I'm still driving. I mean, I'm just letting it,
exactly.
the speed.
And it reduces the stress. And okay, you couldn't write the great American novel that way, but it made the experience a lot pleasant, lower stress, you know,
Absolutely.
You're fresher when you got there. So, and this is here now. So, I mean, it's not like we're going to turn a switch and go from, you know, the Model T to, you know, the Jetsons car. It's an evolution. And we're already there. We're already on the path.
Man, it's such an interesting world. Greg Gardner, Detroit Free Press. I didn't write down your Twitter handle, and I apologize for that. I want to make sure we mention that.
Greg Gardner 12 at Greg Gardner 12.
All right. Well, we will stay in touch. Thank you so much for hopping in the garage with us here on our podcast, and we'll talk soon. We'll definitely talk soon because there's more and more coming every day.
Glad to join you, Jim.
Greg Gardner, Detroit Free Press, our latest episode of In the Garage, episode 14. Thank you so much for joining us again. Subscribe on iTunes. Check it out at WCSX.com. Later on in the week, we will have Jim Campbell, the head of racing for Chevrolet. We're going to talk Le Mans. I can't imagine self-driving race cars. It'd be boring as hell. Thanks again for joining us.